Session number 816, Winifred Sanford, Reel 1.
Perhaps just, you know, for general background, you can tell me a little about your, how you became to be connected with Spain and your position.
I used to go to Spain, to the Pyrenees, for holidays. And at first, I didn't get down into Spain. Later, in the holidays, I went down in. And 1931, my husband and I went to live in Spain, beginning in Barcelona, and climbing Catalonia, walking the hills, and the Pyrenees. And then we went down, went to Madrid, and walked round the Sierra de Gredos. I put that in my earlier part, in the 1931 story, in the villages. We both spoke Spanish, you see. And then we went back to London and went only for holidays for a few years. In 1936, we decided to go and live in Spain. And we had thought of going to Malaga, but we went to the Pyrenees first. We knew the Pyrenees thoroughly, very thoroughly. I crossed it many times, and winter and summer. And we were in the Enchanted Mountains. When I went down to buy food at a village, and I heard that was something happening in Barcelona. And I stayed overnight and collected all the news I could, went back, but within a few days we decided we better go to Barcelona. Mm. And we went down, and I got a job in the office of PSUC, United Socialist Party, and sending out information in bulletins. I hadn't a single one of those bulletins in my possession. They just went out to all English-speaking countries, you see. Yeah. We wrote them. I wrote them and rolled them off and posted them. Then about the March or April, I think, of 1937, I had to go to England, and I couldn't get back in. So the medical mission appointed me to go and be a kind of liaison officer amongst the nurses and doctors and send back news. They said the nurses were going to Spain. They got lost. They never wrote home. They were so interested in what they were doing. Yeah. They provided me with film, and I took photographs. And
it was July, was it?
Oh, no, it was earlier than that, about April. Yeah. I was only home a couple of weeks, and I had to go back. Yeah. And I took the photos together with one of the Englishmen who had a good Leica camera and was very independent and could take what he liked. But I took a great many photos, and I have catalogued them and mounted them, and they're in the Marx Memorial Library, and they're all on record. I've made a master file. They're over 500, five or 600, not counting what I lost.
can I just go back? What was the original interest in Spain? You spoke Spanish, and you...
Well, I suppose it was the climbing. We did a lot of mountaineering, and I learned to climb in Wales, and the Pyrenees, of course, was the great attraction.
Yes.
So I didn't learn Spanish until I knew we were going to be in Spain a long time.
But in 1936, when you decided to settle...
Well, we longed to go back, you see.
Yes.
In the end of 1930... my mother received a card from a young man in Sabadell, near Barcelona, in Esperanto, and she was an Esperantist. And she gave it to me, and I wrote to him in Spanish and told him we were coming, and he invited us to his home, and that was our start.
Oh,
we made friends with a Catalan family, you see.
You had studied Spanish?
Well, by myself,
yes.
I didn't know any before. I knew French, of course. I had learnt French at school, and had used it quite a bit in France. But I don't know, except that we were drawn to Spain, you see.
Yes.
And we really studied it. And not only, I mean, the language, but the customs and the dances and everything. I never really read many Spanish books. I read a great many newspapers, of course, when I had that job.
Yes. Before the war... broke out. I mean, did you were you in touch with the political situation in Spain?
Oh yes, I have recorded that in the 1931 article. But every time something political came up, I wrote it down, and I knew what was going on. And I knew how the people felt. Mm. I knew just how they felt. And in Sabadell there was a Republican club, to which we were invited. Our friend there was a member, and he took us. And there were big round tables where people sat and drank coffee, men. Mm. I was the only woman, I think. And when I went in, my introduction was, she's an English woman, she's been educated like a man, and so she can sit here. And then I have put down everything I learned at that club. And of course I could read the papers, and I could read Catalan. Yeah. I never spoke it because I didn't need to. They could reply in Catalan, but I spoke Spanish. Yes. And of course, as time went on, I got more and more fluent at it. But I knew the Spanish of the people, the markets and so on.
Yes. And you had, were you aware that a crisis was brewing in 1936?
Oh, yes.
Did this communicate itself?
Oh, yes. 1931 was what taught me. I was there the whole of that year, going from village to village.
Yes.
And I knew how they felt. I knew how they felt about the church, especially. Mm-hmm. I came away from Spain, I still believe it, there weren't many Catholics in Spain. I only met three men in the mountain villages who admitted they were Catholic. The others took good care to tell us they were not. And the women were the ones that went to church. When the war broke out, I said to some of the women, don't you miss the churches? And the young girls said, no, we only went because our mothers made us, or told us to. Also in the village, the only youth organisation was the Daughters of Mary, which was a youth organisation for the girls. They had something to do, you see.
Yes.
But they didn't want it. That's why they adapted so quickly to the modern youth organisations, and the political ones and so on that set up,
yes,
during the war.
So you had an aware, you were aware that there was a groundswell that
this, yes,
this might well.
And I, at that time I knew more the names of the political leaders and so on than I have put here, because I've rather forgotten names.
Yes.
Living in America so long, I purposely put names out of my mind, and that's why it was that I wrote it with fictitious names.
I interrupted you in 1937. You.
Well, then I joined the medical mission. Yes. I went to them, you see, and
If I can interrupt you, what job, when in 1936, what job did your husband have in Spain?
Oh, well, he joined the brigades. He went through and joined the brigades, you see.
That on arrival in Spain, he didn't have a kind of civil occupation in Spain?
No,
before.
No.
He didn't straighten
through it? No, he almost straight through. He was one of the first.
Yes.
Oh, yes. But with the medical mission, you see, they had to send me through with my passport. And I wasn't a medical person, I wasn't a nurse, you see. So they asked me to send information and write. And I gradually became the liaison officer of all the nurses, and towards the end, the American nurses as well. And it was my job to go to hospitals and find out what they wanted. And at first I had no means of going except hitchhiking. And then they sent me a car. And after that, of course, I was quite mobile. And I went to the hospital, and I would stay as long as I wanted at a hospital. It might be a few days. It could have been a few weeks. And I learned all they were doing. And I did translations from the war newspapers. If a Spaniard wrote something up, I translated it into French and English, and so on. I did any sort of work like that was wanted. Occasionally I was called in to help in an operating room or something, wherever they wanted me. And I stayed until the brigades came out.
Where were you stationed all this time?
I wasn't stationed anywhere. I just had my possessions in my car, my typewriter, and we didn't have much else. And I would go... Well, I had to go back to Barcelona to know if there was... For instance, if a new nurse or doctor came out, I was sent up to the border to pick them up.
Yes.
So I went up to the French border and then took them to wherever they were told to go. They were all scattered, you see. There'd,
yes,
be only two or three British in one hospital. Perhaps only one.
And then you toured the hospitals?
Yes, I went.
Checking up on the...
I went wherever there was a British nurse, you see. And I'd hear there was a British nurse at a hospital, and I'd go there and find out all about it. At one time during the war, I wrote a very big article on all the things the British nurses had told me.
Yes.
I heard later, well, a few years ago, that Franco has got that article and had it reprinted and gives it out in the libraries. on what the British medical people did in Spain.
I see. What journal did you write it for?
Oh, any local papers, and they used to translate it. I worked quite a while with Dr. Saxton, who was the blood donor specialist. He had his van, and if I heard he was at a hospital or anywhere, I'd go to it, you see, to get his information. And he wanted to encourage local Spanish girls to give blood, because they were always drawing on us, you see. And he got a girl from a local village, small town, and I photographed her and photographed the man who received the blood and the doctor and his assistant and wrote the article up. And that was translated into Catalan and put in her local paper.
Yes. Did you... were you in touch with the fighting in the war? Were you involved in...
Well, the nearest, I suppose... I was on the Ebro. I went up to the Cave Hospital on the Ebro and... I've got a lot of information about that, but I've got the photographs of that, chiefly. The photographs are very important.
Have you in fact written in your, or have you taped and then transcribed the material on the hospital?
No, I haven't taped it. Now, I haven't got any here on the Ebro. No, I haven't. No, most of my writing so far has been on the attitude of the Spanish people to the war. I was so completely involved with Spanish women that I wanted to write how they felt and how they worked and the Spanish people. And I got some stories. There's one story one of the nurses gave me at a hospital I was at, near Belchite, I think, and I've done that. It was a very significant story about the brigades, of a man who was brought in naked and they never found out what nationality he was. And the argument amongst the nurses, you see, one thought he was American, another thought he was English, another thought he was a Spaniard.
Yeah.
And they gave in to the Spanish girl in the end. I've written that up. And the other place I was very near the front was Teruel.
Yeah.
I went up in midwinter, Teruel, through the snow. And I wasn't quite, we took Teruel, you see, and there was a hospital at Cuevas Labradas. It wasn't a hospital, it was a house, turned into a hospital, just behind the lines. So we had the airplanes over us all the time, we could see them bombing the front. That was one of the near places I went to. They were very intense times.
You were not there when the counter-offensive...
Well, I had one, yes. When they came down from the Ebro, you see, and the fascists went to cut the road.
Yes.
I was sent from Barcelona with a nurse, and there was, I think he was a Cuban comrade, asked at the last minute if I'd take him. They had to go through to Madrid, to a hospital. It was Good Friday of 38. And I drove that, went through Tortosa as they were bombing it. They completely bombed it while I was there watching it. And watching the bombs coming down. But we got across on a second bridge, and as we went along the road, the guards told us to take the lower road and not the main road. We saw the people coming towards us, the local people fleeing with their donkey carts and so on. And we saw the aeroplanes going in circles over the road, shelling them, bombing them, as they came along the road. And I said, we're getting too near the fascists, we shall have to turn back. And we had to turn back. We got back to Barcelona at 1 a.m. I've written that story. That's the Good Friday story.
Yes.
But that was a very, very important time.
Well, it seems to me that you probably... There's a lot there that I would like to take. We will go over that ground again.
Yes.
But there are two areas perhaps we could talk about.
Mm-hmm.
One is the events prior to going to Spain, which in fact predisposed you to sympathy with the international brigaders and the cause of the Republicans. Perhaps you'd tell me a little about yourself and your own early life.
I was a teacher.
From what part of the country?
London. I'm in London. But I don't know. I know that we went to Spain climbing, and then we went to live with this Catalan family, you see, and the women of that family, his wife and sister and aunt, taught me how to be a Spanish woman amongst them, how to go into the markets and so on. So I felt at one with the Spanish people from that year.
Earlier than that, had you been involved in the labour movement?
I was brought up in the labour movement. My parents they were in the labour movement, as long as I can remember. I can remember my father saying, I'm going to have to vote Liberal. But if there were a Labour man, I'd vote Labour. Well, I was quite tiny, you see. Yes. And my parents were very aware. They were Baptist before I was born, but they gave it up before I was born. So they had rather strict ideas about life, but they were socialists. They'd adopted it before I was born, you see, so I was a very lucky woman.
What branch of the Labour movement were they?
Well, involved? It was only the Labour Party when we were children. Yes. There wasn't anything
yes.
else.
Yes, I was thinking of the ILP.
Well, they did join the ILP a bit later, but my mother wrote to me after I had left home and away, and she said, I've given up the ILP because I've decided they're not a revolutionary party.
She found the Labour Party was.
No, I don't know, because I was away from home then and I only had her letters. How it is I've got all this first-hand material is I wrote to her the whole time I was away.
Yes.
Every time I went to Spain. And she kept all the letters. So I was able to take the information from them.
Do you have the original letters?
Yes.
These would be typed
them all up. And I typed up other times I was in the Pyrenees, mostly. I also walked around the Picos de Europa in the north of Spain, from the Basque country and across and back to the Pyrenees. We always walked, you see,
yes,
all the time. When we went in 1931, we only had £100 and my last month's salary to last the year. But we had good boots, good mountain boots, a good camera, and we just slept out where we were, on the hillside. You see, we couldn't afford to sleep in, we couldn't afford hotels. Sometimes in the villages, they would say, come and sleep in my house. We haven't seen a foreigner for 2 years. And then we'd pay our way in. And we stayed at inns if there was a fiesta on in a village. But apart from that, we slept out.
The other thing perhaps we could talk about is, are the hospitals that you saw and the provision that there was available to the Republicans during the war.
Yes.
You must have seen a large number of hospitals.
Yes, I did, yes.
And what were medical facilities like on the...
To begin with, there were very few hospitals at all in Spain. What there were run by the church and the nuns. And that's one thing I learned from that Republican club in Sabadell. There was a man at the table who'd been taken to hospital, and the nuns wouldn't wait on him because he wasn't a Catholic. We collected to send him things. Had no attention at all. They would do nothing at all because he wouldn't profess to being Catholic. So I knew there were very few hospitals, and what there were not good. And so mostly the hospitals that the government had to have were either in monasteries or private houses.
Yes.
Nearly all of them. There were a few good hospitals, one in Barcelona that the government opened and established during the war, which was a very fine one. But apart from that, it was always makeshift. It had just to manage with what there was, what they could do with a monastery room.
Simply because the existing hospitals were essentially Catholic. And
well, of course, they took over the existing hospitals, but there weren't enough. There weren't many of them, even for civilians, let alone for a war.
How did they staff them? I mean, given the fact that the nuns were
well, some of the nuns, of course, who were nurses, just dressed in ordinary dress, and we saw them. We met one who had been a teacher, and she was in ordinary dress in the train in the first two or three days. And she said, oh, she'd be all right. They were all ready. The nuns and the priests were all ready for it. They all had civilian clothes, hidden,
yes,
ready. And
This was through fear?
They knew it was coming.
Yes.
They knew something was coming. They always lived like that.
And then when the hospitals were taken over, they remained there, did they?
But I think some did. Yeah, I think some did. Because there were some Spanish nurses, but not many. Very few, compared to what we think of as a medical staff. Well, when our girls went out, they immediately took on three or four Spanish girls and taught them. They taught them straight away. They taught them what to do. One of my jobs was to take thermometers to the girls later on in the war. And they said the Spanish nurses broke so many. They did not know how to handle them, you see. And they really helped those Spanish girls. They taught them well, because I thought the British and American nurses were some of the best there. They're well trained, very efficient.
How many nurses were coming out from Britain?
Well, on my list, I had 42 nurses.
This was in 1937?
Yes. Well, I mean, I made up my list as I went along, you see.
Yes.
And...
This is throughout the whole war, then, or 42?
Well, that's all I had. There were a few more, but I didn't get to all of them. I had six doctors. I've heard since there were others. I said, well, I never saw him in Spain. And I had a list of 120, and the rest were ambulance drivers. And, of course, I contacted them as well, because they were medical units, you
120
see.
120?
Personnel.
I see, yes. And how many other foreign nurses, other than the British nurses, would there be?
Well, I met Dutch and Czech, Austrian.
Was the British contingent
Canadian.
The biggest contingent?
I don't know whether they were any bigger than the American, because I didn't have a list of the American girls.
And you couldn't estimate the size of the American?
I should say about the same as ours, but I can't be sure.
And these 42 were spread between...
They were separate, yes, separated. Wherever they wanted a nurse, you see, they'd send one. Sometimes it was one, sometimes two in a hospital.
I see. And they, in effect, were, apart from being nurses themselves, were training.
They were training the Spanish girls, yes.
And was this succeeding towards the end of the war?
Oh, yes.
Or was there a Spanish nursing force?
Yes, there was, yes. Oh, yes, they learnt very well.
And medical staff, doctors?
Well, I knew quite a few of the Spanish doctors as well. Some of our girls were the nurses to the Spanish doctors. They weren't with the British doctor always, you see. There were Czech doctors and Austrian doctors.
But there were a number of Spanish doctors initially.
Quite a few Spanish doctors, yes. And Spanish surgeons.
What about the facilities in the hospital? Could they cope with the pressures upon them during the war?
They had to. It's just a question of had to, you see.
What I'm thinking of was there sort of loss of life because the facilities did not exist in the hospitals?
Well, if you regard speedy casual work today, I'd say yes. But if you think of it, well, even in those days, I should say they saved as many as they could. Because in a war, the men are not always brought in a state to be saved.
Of course.
You see, you've got to count that.
Sure. What I was really thinking of, was there something lacking which was essential to them in the hospital?
Heat. The rooms were so terribly cold, the operating rooms, and they would have to burn alcohol if they got it to burn, just to take the chill off the room while they were operating. Mm. And I helped several times, and I had a great big coat, like a sheepskin, uncovered. It was just the bare sheepskin with the wool inside. And I used to wear that inside the hospitals when I was working.
Why was this? Why the lack of heat?
Well, energy supply, I suppose, yes. And these villages, there was barely electricity, you see.
Sure.
In 1931, I went to many a village that hadn't got electricity, except in perhaps the priest's house and the mayor's house, and one or two.
How many new hospitals were being established at that time?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Another
thing about these hospitals, we used to hold meetings of all the workers in, some of the workers in, the leading workers who really could organise them morally and so on, who we used to say, work as though this hospital's going to be here permanently. Set up your operating, because the nurses had to go to a place and set up an operating room, be ready that night.
Yes.
I have written that up in the Beltiti article.
Yes.
And perhaps next week the hospital was gone. Bombed. Completely gone. Some of the people gone, and we moved out.
Yes.
And that was one of the things, to keep up the morale, you see.
Yes.
A nurse would be so depressed that all that work she'd done was gone in one night. And I would have to say to them, well, you start again when you're there. You're now at another hospital, and you start again. And that happened again and again. And emotionally, what was bad, that some of the people we worked with, the men, had gone back to the front, and they'd killed her. Within a week, you see, you'd got used to working with somebody. Yeah. The next week you heard he was killed. And I think it affects all of us. I was talking to one of the men. It affected us in the way you face all your problems in life afterwards. You had to face that. I think it was quite important as far as character making was concerned.
Yes, the fact that someone, a patient who had...
Yes, well, not anybody, might be one of the orderlies, somebody you see, one of the ambulance men. And you've got used to being with him, working with him, talking to him.
Yes.
You were told a fortnight later he was gone. That was a very emotional part of hospital work.
Were you short of any medicines, drugs, or...
Well, I don't know from... I mean, the doctors and nurses could tell you that more.
Yes. But you were not aware of any...
If I knew, I didn't put it down as my part of the work. If I knew, I could report to the London Committee that they wanted something. Yes. But then it was gone from my mind. I'd reported it. It was up to the London Committee to send it out, you see.
So you don't carry in your mind what the main deficiencies were in the hospitals?
I don't think so. I can't remember. I was called in once, right up at Cuevas Labradas at Teruel front. There was a doctor operating, and Dr. Saxton was giving the anaesthetic. He called me in, and he said, hold this man's arm so that he doesn't jump if I increase the anaesthetic. And I just stood there in perishing cold with, I remember, this big sheepskin coat on, holding onto his arm tightly, while the surgeon was operating on his intestines, you see. And you had just to do what you were told. It's the discipline that they were talking about, that Bob Cooney was talking about.
Yes.
Complete discipline. You never thought of anything else. And I said to the doctor afterwards, I sort of fancy making me do that. I wasn't a nurse. He said, I knew you could do it. And in one period, right towards the end of the war, the committee sent me some watches. And they said, the nurses are saying all their watches are worn out. And I had to see that a girl who needed a watch got one from me. I gave my own to one of the nurses. Because after 2.5 years, there were all that dirt and dust and stuff. I do know that.
Do you have any vivid memories of any of these makeshift hospitals? I mean, you must have vivid memories
of
many of them.
Of course, Wetty is one of the most vivid. That big monastery. And the organisation and the discipline there. They had an English nurse there, a Scottish nurse. Was really good. She's not here, but, oh, she was good.
The foreign nurses eventually took over these hospitals.
No, but... they took their responsibilities so well.
Yes.
I remember another one. We had trouble with her because she was frightened to leave her day duty and leave it to a night nurse. She wanted to stay on. She was so afraid to leave her men to the... And then she'd go down to the kitchen, there was no food left. Because you had to eat when it was on. Because we were always short of food. That is something we were short of.
Yes.
And I had to sort out those little troubles, you see, like that.
But the foreign nurses tended to take positions of responsibility.
Oh, they had to. Oh, yes, they had to.
This was in the absence of a Spanish...
Yes, enough. I mean, enough Spanish girl. A Spanish girl who could work with a surgeon, you see, in the operating room. I mean,
yes.
There weren't many, but of course, all the English and American girls could.
Yes.
They were trained. There was one very interesting one, actually, not written up yet. There was a girl who had been trained as a nurse in isolation hospitals and fever work in London. So I sought her out. Her name was Penny Phelps. And she was with the Italian battalion, the Garibaldis. They were stationed in that village. And when I got there, she was in a great big house, which had been turned into a hospital. It wasn't very far from Madrid. I think it was Quintanar. And when she arrived... the doctor had been taken away with scarlet fever, and she took over the whole hospital. Many of her cases were civilian, the local people would come to her and she'd have to do what she could for them. On Christmas night, she had 5 burnt children in from a fire, and she saved 4, and the baby died. But she saved the other 4. She was faced with this sort of thing, but she was also faced with infection.